For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It's June 9th. We are in Parashas Yisro. We're on page 410. We're in the Aseres HaDibros, and we started Shabbos, which is the fourth of the Aseres HaDibros. We started it last week, and now we'll continue. Last week we talked about Kiddush because of the first words of Zohar Yom HaShabbos. The Kadsho, remember, the day of Shabbos is sanctify it. And now we'll continue with Pasuk Tes, verse 9. Sheshes Yomim Tavod V'Asisa Kol Melachtecha. 6 days you shall work and do all of your Malacha. Tavod means to work. Malacha means to work. Okay. Obviously it has to be a little bit different. But 6 days you... the word eved can mean to slave, so you can slave away, yeah. You do work, and you should do everything that you need to do. V'yom ha'shvi, on the seventh day, Shabbos Hashem Elokecha, it's a Shabbos Hashem your God. Lo sasech ha'malacha, you shall not do any work. Ata uvincha uvitecha, you and your son and your daughter. Avdecha v'amascha, your slave and your female slave. Uvhemtecha, and your animal. And your ger, your convert that is in your midst. So before we read the rest, so what does it mean that 6 days you shall work and accomplish everything? Accomplish all your work. Two different words for work. But what does it mean to accomplish everything? We know that at the end of the week you're not finished everything that you are able to do. I mean, if you finish everything you're able to do by the time Shabbos starts, then when Shabbos ends, you'd have a very long vacation. So what does it mean you shall do all of your work?
You mean prepare for Shabbos?
I guess it means when Shabbos comes,
that's it.
You can't do it anymore.
It should be ki'ilu. It should be as if you've completed all your work. So that when Shabbos begins, one is no longer...
obligated?
Well, no. One is no longer...
oh, hell.
Is no longer mentally involved in their work. Your work is done. It should be as if it is complete. So we should not be involved in our work on Shabbos. Now the halacha is that hirhurim are mutarim. One is allowed to think about doing work on Shabbos. That's the halacha. You're allowed to think about it. What's that?
I don't want to.
No, well, it's better not to. It is better not to. The halacha is it's permitted if a person is thinking about their work or wants to think about their work or can't help themselves and thinks about their work, it is permitted. However, in the spirit of Shabbos, it is meritorious to not even think about it. That when Shabbos comes, work is out of sight, out of mind, is not focused on at all. Well, now, although it is true one is allowed to think about their work, even though it's better not to, one is allowed to think about their work on Shabbos, one is not allowed to talk about work on Shabbos. So there is a halacha of talking about work. Now this doesn't just mean to talk about one's business. This means to talk about doing that which is prohibited to be done on Shabbos. So for example, we know that we're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. So what if it's Shabbos and tonight I plan on cooking dinner for Sunday. So tonight I plan on cooking. So, on Shabbos, one is not allowed to say that tonight I will cook dinner for tomorrow. Since cooking is prohibited on Shabbos, one is not allowed to talk about cooking on Shabbos. Or, since we know that driving is prohibited on Shabbos, so it is prohibited on Shabbos to say that tomorrow, which is Sunday, I'm going to drive to Savannah. Even though I'm not driving to Savannah today, which is Shabbos, I'm going to drive to Savannah tomorrow, which is Sunday. One is not allowed to say, I'm going to drive tomorrow to Savannah. One is allowed to say, I'm going to go tomorrow to Savannah. That's permitted. Because you're not talking about doing that which is prohibited. going to Savannah is not prohibited. It is driving to Savannah that's prohibited. So, therefore, one should not say on Shabbos that they're going to do a malacha after Shabbos. What if we're not talking about something which I'm actually going to do? I'm just talking about the act of driving. I'm not talking about that I am going to drive. Instead, we're talking about driving. I enjoy driving. Driving is a lot of fun. I hate driving. Driving is boring. We once had a beautiful drive. All of that is permitted, because we're not talking about going to do a malacha after Shabbos. Instead, we're talking about the idea of a malacha. I like cooking. I like cooking. You're allowed to say on Shabbos, because you're not saying I'm going to cook. Say I like cooking. I enjoy cooking. However, to trade recipes on Shabbos, that should be avoided, because since recipes involve malacha, that the way that you make, someone says, oh, this is really delicious, how do you make it? Well, the way you make it is, first you, and then you, and then you preheat the oven, and then you, well, that's all about malacha. It's best that that not be done on Shabbos. What ingredients are in this salad, that there's no problem with. Right, what's in it? There's nothing, that's not an issue. But the actual instructions about how to prepare it, which involves malacha, that is best not discussed on Shabbos. The general rule of thumb is that anything which is relevant and involves a malacha should not be discussed on Shabbos. Anything which is not relevant is okay. So another example. This is not malacha, this is about monetary issues. That we know that buying and selling things on Shabbos is prohibited. It's only rabbinic, but it is prohibited to buy and sell things on Shabbos. So I come to your house, and I noticed that you have a new hardwood floor. I was also thinking of putting in a hardwood floor. So I ask you details about the contractor and who you used and what it cost. Now that's a problem, because I'm planning on doing it too. So I'm researching the act of getting my floors done on Shabbos. That's a problem. However, if I have no intention of doing it, and you're done, you've already done your hardwood floor, you're not doing it again, I'm just curious. By the way, what does cost you? Now, that is technically permitted. It's best not discussing prices on Shabbos, but it is technically permitted because it's just discussing what happened. It has nothing to do with the future. No one is going to base their future actions on this conversation. Same thing with, I come to your house and I notice a new item that you purchased. So, if it's a nice piece of artwork, so I'm not going to buy the piece of artwork. You've already purchased the piece of artwork. I say, oh boy, that looks expensive. What did it cost you? So that is a permitted conversation, even though it's not in the spirit of Shabbos, but it is permitted to talk about that. But if I notice that you have a new set of folding chairs, I also need a set of folding chairs. Where'd you get it? Oh, and how much did it cost? That's prohibited, because there I am planning on buying folding chairs, and as we're having this conversation, I'm taking notes. I mean, I'm not actually taking notes, but in my mind, I am following the conversation because I am interested in purchasing folding chairs as well. So the general rule of thumb is that when a malacha, or something which is generally prohibited on Shabbos, a discussion about it that is relevant, which I plan on doing, or you plan on doing, or we plan on, there's something involved that is relevant, that should not be talked about on Shabbos. But when a malacha or something prohibited is not discussed, or if it's just recounting something that happened in the past but isn't really relevant, or if we're just speculating. If I won the Mega Millions, you know what I would do? Mm-hmm. So we know that that's a pipe dream. That's never going to happen. So that's just talk. So it may be pointless talk, but it is just talk, and therefore it is not a problem on Shabbos to be making that having that discussion on Shabbos. Yeah?
If somebody wants information from you, your phone number or address, and you're not discussing business, but can you give them a business card and say, there's my number?
So an address is permitted. A phone number is not, because a phone number involves a malacha. How does he call you? An address is okay. Now, a business card, since it has an address on it, is fine. That's why phone books are permitted on Shabbos.
But it also has a phone number on it.
Doesn't matter. Since it also has the address, it's okay. That's why a phone book
should
is not...
Should you even carry a business card on Shabbos?
You could if you want. You could if you want. I mean, there's nothing... You shouldn't conduct business.
Right.
Right? That you shouldn't do. But if you want to say, you know, it has an address on it. If your business card only has your workplace address, so the only purpose in giving it to someone is for work, that's a little bit of a stretch. But if it's your home address, so there's nothing wrong with that. And as I said, that's why a phone book is not muktzah on Shabbos. You're allowed to use a phone book. One time, many years ago, when we were the first few years of our marriage, we moved, and then apparently the movers didn't do such a good job, and the door to our refrigerator fell off on Shabbos.
Oh no!
So the thing came apart. So we had to prop it up so that it would be against the fridge and closed
right.
on Shabbos. I needed something to prop underneath it. So I just didn't think it through. I was thinking, could I use a phone book? I thought a phone book would be muktzah because a phone book, it's only for making phone calls. Until everybody pointed out to me that there are addresses in a phone book, and therefore there's nothing wrong. A phone book is not muktzah, even though it also has phone numbers, but addresses, there's nothing wrong with nothing wrong with an address on Shabbos, and therefore phone books are permitted to be moved on Shabbos. That's the general thumb of what one speaks about on Shabbos. Now, it is best if one doesn't speak about things that are not, as we say, Shabbos-dick, that are not in the Shabbos spirit. But that's a little bit less intense of an issue. It's best if one keeps their conversation on a Shabbos sort of topic, whether it is a Torah topic, or a Musar topic, or an improvement topic, or even if it's a little bit lighter, but it's more family-oriented or something like that, as opposed to, you know, let's talk about the vacation we'd like to go on in a few weeks. It's not a Shabbos talk. So it's not prohibited, but it is best if it would be a conversation were kept to Shabbos things. The truth is that the Gemara says that Chazal, our sages, considered prohibiting all idle talk on Shabbos, so that one would make sure to be focused only on Shabbos. In the end, they didn't do so, because it would have been too difficult for people to do that, but it was something that they contemplated, because of the fact that Shabbos is so special, it really should only be something, a day where we talk about things that are more important than just idle chatter. Now, then it says that on the seventh day is Shabbos to Hashem your God. Here, Rashi points this out, and this Chazal tell us, that we keep Shabbos not for ourselves, we keep Shabbos for Hashem. And we should remember that it is for Hashem that we are keeping Shabbos. This is something which is an interesting thing, which I've pointed out to you before, that Shabbos is that mitzvah, which I think more than any other mitzvah in the Torah, is the mitzvah that those who don't keep Shabbos, Shabbos appears to be very restrictive. Those who do keep Shabbos can't imagine life without Shabbos because it's so beautiful and so wonderful. As opposed to virtually every other mitzvah. A mitzvah, for example, to eat delicious food. A mitzvah to eat delicious food. Let's say a mitzvah at a wedding, because it's a suras mitzvah, it's a joyous time, eat delicious food. Everybody understands? That's a fun mitzvah. That's an enjoyable mitzvah. Even those who don't generally keep the Torah would acknowledge it's a good mitzvah, it's a fun mitzvah. Fasting on Yom Kippur, even those who keep the Torah will acknowledge fasting on Yom Kippur is not the most enjoyable thing to do. We do it because we have to. But we all understand it's not the most enjoyable thing to do. But most mitzvahs, whether you're doing it or not doing it, everybody will acknowledge. For example, kashrus, keeping kosher. Everybody will agree keeping kosher is a rather difficult thing to do, and it is restrictive. Now, it may not be very restrictive. Those who keep kosher understand it's not the most restrictive thing in the world. I mean, there's plenty of kosher food around, but it is restrictive. And whether you keep it or don't keep it, you admit it's restrictive. Shabbos is the one mitzvah that I know of that those who don't keep it think it's restrictive. Those who do keep it can't understand why anybody wouldn't want to keep it, because it's such a wonderful thing. So, those who keep it, one may be tempted, after one gets used to keeping Shabbos, to feel that I keep Shabbos for myself. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. It's terrific. It's great. I'm done with the week. It's wonderful. It's great. It's a great day. And we're reminded here in the Torah, we don't keep Shabbos because it's a great day. We don't keep Shabbos because it's a break. We don't keep Shabbos because I can relax. We keep Shabbos for Hashem. That's the reason to keep Shabbos, because Hashem said to keep Shabbos. That's why we keep Shabbos. Shabbos la Hashem alakecha, for Hashem your God. Now, then the pasuk says that you shouldn't do any malacha. That's the lamed tes malachos, the 39 malachos. Nowhere in the Torah are the 39 malachos listed. Nowhere. It never lists the 39 types of primary work on Shabbos. It only says, here it doesn't say at all, the only way we know that there are 39, I shouldn't say the way we know 39, the only way we know what the 39 are is because later on in the Torah connects Shabbos to the building of the Mishkan. And since there were 39 primary acts of work that were done to build the Mishkan, we know that that's what you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. But it does not list them anywhere in the Torah. So when it says you should not do any type of work, what type of work? What does that mean? Doesn't tell us in the Torah. And contrary to what many people believe, work does not mean going to work. It doesn't mean doing business. It doesn't mean going to one's place of business and doing business on Shabbos. That is not what the Torah means. The Torah means the 39 malachos. Now, most of the time, doing business does violate at least one, if not several, of the 39 malachos. But it doesn't have to. It doesn't always. Let's say your job is to be a security guard in a place that has an Eruv where you're allowed to carry. So being a security guard, there is no malacha, there is no violation of Shabbos that you do. You just stand there holding a gun. So there's nothing, you're just carrying. If there is an Eruv, if you're allowed to carry in that area, then there is no malacha that's transgressed in being a security guard. It's still prohibited to work on Shabbos, although there are certain types of jobs that are permitted. For example, it's permitted for a Jew to babysit on Shabbos, although the terms of the job and how they are paid, that's a little bit complicated, and it's beyond the scope of this particular discussion. But that does need a little bit of attention. But a person's place of work, a person's vocation, that with which they make their livelihood, is not what the Torah means when it says you shall not do work. It means the 39 acts of work that were done to build the Mishkan. And as I said, most of the time, a person's way that they make their livelihood does violate at least one, if not many, of these 39. There are many rabbinic prohibitions on Shabbos, and that will cover everything else. Meaning, because as we said before, any kind of transaction of a monetary transaction or business transaction is going to be prohibited at least rabbinically, if not from the Torah. So you can't do any work, and then it lists who can't do any work. You, your son, your daughter, your slaves, male and female, your animals, and the ger, the convert that's in your midst. So we understand you can't do any work. Your sons and your daughters, why would we think your sons and your daughters aren't included in the mitzvah of Shabbos? I mean, your sons and your daughters are included in everything else. So here we have a little bit of a difference in the way that it works with children. We know that the Torah only gives mitzvos to those who are of age, boys who are 13 and older, girls who are 12 and older. Younger than that, the Torah is not speaking to them. The Torah is speaking to anybody who is 13 or 12 years old and older. That's who the Torah is speaking to. At the same time, we know that parents have a mitzvah to train their children that when they become 12 or 13, that they will keep the Torah. Because if you raise a child until they are 12 or 13 without teaching them how to keep the Torah, it's not going to happen magically overnight when they turn 12 or 13 that they'll keep the Torah. So it requires a lot of training. So since it requires a lot of training, parents have a mitzvah to train their children. This mitzvah begins when a child is old enough to understand what it means to be trained. That age, when a child is old enough to be trained, the Gemara says, it depends on the child. Some children it's a little bit younger. Some children it's a little bit older. It depends on how sharp a child is, how accelerated a child is. And that age, the Gemara says, is between 6 and 7 years old. A child under the age of 6 is too young to be trained. Therefore, a 5-year-old, a 4-year-old, they are not trained to do mitzvos because they're too young to be trained to do mitzvos. Even though it may seem like you can train them, but the Gemara tells us it's not really training. When a 5-year-old does something, it's not really training, it's just parroting, it's not really anything. They don't really understand what they're doing, and there is no training, there's no chinuch for a 5-year-old child. 6 or 7 is when training chinuch begins. With Shabbos, that's the same thing. When are we obligated to train our children to keep Shabbos? When they turn 6 or 7 years old. That means if a 5-year-old wants to turn a light on Shabbos, one need not stop the child because they're too young to be trained. Even though you'll say, yeah, but my child knows that it's Shabbos. My child knows we don't turn on lights on Shabbos. That may be true, but he's still too young to be trained. Training, chinuch, is 6 or 7 years old. Younger than that, they're too young to be trained. So Shabbos is no different than any other mitzvah when it comes to training the child. The difference is as follows. Let's say my 3-year-old says to me, Abba, I'm going to turn the light on for you. I have to stop him from turning the light on for me. Because we can't allow a child, even though they're below the age of being trained to keep Shabbos, we cannot allow a child to do a violation of Shabbos on behalf of us. And that's what it means, you and your son and your daughter. Your children, you have to prevent them from violating Shabbos for you on Shabbos. So the difference is as follows. If a child, if the light is on in their bedroom and they would like to go to sleep and they want to shut the light and the child is under 6 years old, a parent need not stop the child. It's perfectly acceptable for that child to shut the light because they're doing it for themselves. But if the light is on in the parent's bedroom and the parents want to go to sleep and the child notices it and says, I'm going to shut the light for you, a parent must stop that child and prevent them from shutting the light on behalf of the parent, even though the child has not yet reached the age of chinuch, of training. Because the mitzvah is that even children who are doing it on behalf of parents must be prevented. So we know that there are exceptions to most mitzvahs in the Torah for life-threatening situations.
Yeah.
Shabbos is no different than any other mitzvah in the Torah when it comes to a life-threatening situation. There are 3 exceptions to that: idolatry, immorality, and murder. Those are the 3 exceptions. But other than that, when a mitzvah comes in the way of a person's life or a threat to a person's life, so then we don't keep the mitzvah. That's true for eating pork as well, not just Shabbos. It's any of the mitzvahs of the Torah are set aside to prevent loss of life. But other than that, there is not an exception with Shabbos. Just like there's no exception with other mitzvahs, one has to keep the mitzvah, even though it may be a very difficult thing to do. So that is where the children come in over here with Shabbos. To illustrate the point, I once walked into my room on Shabbos, and one of my young children, below the age of chinuch, was playing with the light, turning it on, turning it off, turning it on, turning it off. I wanted it off. They were turning it on, turning it off. They weren't doing it for me. They were just having a good time. So they had a chair. They climbed up on the chair, and they were just, playing with the light. They saw me walk into the room, and they saw me. They jumped off the chair because they knew they shouldn't be doing that. Shabbos or not Shabbos, they shouldn't have been doing that. They knew that. So they jumped off the chair. Problem is, they left the light on. So I walked out of the room hoping that the child would then get back up on the chair and shut the light. Not for me. The child was going to go have another game. But once I was gone, the child would have a good time again. So I stayed outside the room, waited for the child to shut the light on, and I ran back in and grabbed the child off the chair. And then I took the chair out of the room. So, right. So if the child would have shut it off, would have wanted to shut it off for me, I would have had to stop the child. But they weren't shutting it off for me. The child was just having a good time behind my back. So that is, you don't need to stop a child who is, again, below the age of chinuch, below the age of training. You don't have to stop a child from doing it for their own fun or their own reasons. That you can let happen.
Does this include toys that make noise?
Yes. Yeah, children are allowed to. Absolutely. Children below the age of chinuch, right, below the age of training, are allowed to play with toys that are electric or toys, right, that make noise. Or you know, right, you may not be able to clean that up after the child goes to bed because they're muktzah. You can't move them, but the child can play with them, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's not. There's no problem with that. Your slaves can't work on Shabbos, so. What type of slaves are we talking about over here? There are two types of slaves in the Torah. We have not gotten to the whole discussion of slaves, which we will get to in Parshas Mishpatim. It's coming up pretty soon. We're going to discuss slavery, which is a whole discussion in and of itself. We are conditioned today to believe that all slavery is bad, so we will discuss slavery in the Torah when we get there. But there are two types of slaves that are recognized in the Torah. There are Jewish slaves and non-Jewish slaves. A Jewish slave, it goes without saying, has to keep Shabbos, because a Jewish slave is Jewish. So, of course they have to keep Shabbos. Why would we think otherwise? So that, the Torah is not including over here. Of course, we're just like, we have to keep Shabbos, so do our Jewish slaves. Our non-Jewish slaves have to keep Shabbos as well. A non-Jewish slave, and again, within the category of non-Jewish slaves, there are really two types of non-Jewish slaves. There is a non-Jewish slave that has gone through what can only be called a forced conversion. And it's really beyond the scope of today's class to discuss how that works. And we will get to it. Mirtz Hashem, we will get to it not too long in the future about the different types of slaves. But a non-Jewish slave who has undergone a forced conversion is obligated in mitzvos like a Jew is obligated in mitzvos. And therefore they have to keep Shabbos, just like a Jew has to keep Shabbos. A non-Jewish slave that has not gone through any kind of conversion, so they're not Jewish. So if they're not Jewish, they're not obligated in Shabbos. But, just like with your children, they cannot do a prohibition of Shabbos for you. That they can't do. You can't have your slave do malacha, do violations of Shabbos for you. Now, we don't have slaves today, but we do have non-Jews around. And we know that it's often tempting to ask a non-Jew to do that which we cannot do. So, I left the light on, the air conditioning, I forgot to turn it on before Shabbos, whatever the issue is, and I want to get my non-Jewish neighbor to take care of these things for me on Shabbos. So this is not a simple matter at all. There are situations where it's 100% permissible, and then there are situations where it's 100% prohibited. So it is a whole class in and of itself. I actually taught this recently in the Kollel. We had a whole shiur about it. But just to cover a few examples, we will not be able to cover everything this evening. But generally speaking, if you can't do it, you can't ask a non-Jew to do it either. That's the general rule. Generally speaking, that's the case. There are some exceptions to that rule, but that's generally the rule. One major exception is anything that has to do with a person's health. A person's, sickness, better use a person's health. Anything involving sickness, even if it's not a life-threatening situation, as Herman already pointed out, if it's a life-threatening situation, then a Jew is commanded to violate Shabbos in order to preserve a fellow Jew's life. But if it's not in a life-threatening situation, a person has the flu and is laid up in bed and runs out of medicine, it is perfectly acceptable to ask a non-Jew to go to the store and buy medicine for them. That's perfectly acceptable, since that is because of sickness, not life-threatening sickness, but sickness. So in that situation, it is perfectly acceptable to ask a non-Jew to do a violation of Shabbos for a sick Jew. That would apply even if it wasn't going to the store. Let's say it was coming to the house and turning on the heat or putting on the air conditioning or whatever the situation is, even cooking food, whatever the situation is, if it was necessary for to take care of a sick Jew on Shabbos, one can ask a non-Jew to do work. There's no reason to hint. It is a direct ask. You don't have to beat around the bush. Tell them exactly what you want them to do, and they can do it. And that's fine. But the general rule of thumb is, if you can't do it, you can't ask a non-Jew to do it. Yeah?
I've always heard the concept of a Shabbos goy.
Yes. So we know there's such a thing as a Shabbos goy. There was a common thing in Europe, and in the early years in America, there was always this concept of a Shabbos goy. So that is in situations where one of the exceptions to the rule applies. One of the situations where an exception to the rule applies, in which you can ask a non-Jew to do that which is prohibited for a Jew on Shabbos, one of the exceptions, according to many opinions, is when it is to the benefit of the tzibur, the congregation. So that's why a synagogue, to have a Shabbos goy, that's where, according to many authorities, there is an exception, because it benefits everybody, where everybody's uncomfortable. So the lights go out on Shabbos, and someone's got to turn them on. So to ask a non-Jew to turn on the lights for the sanctuary, for everybody to daven on Shabbos, that many authorities say is okay because it's for a group. But if I'm in my living room and the light goes out and I want to read my book, no. So I'll sit in the dark.
So right. The Kiddush lunch, when they have people who are serving.
Right, that's where you have. Now, serving is not necessarily a prohibition anyway.
Oh, okay.
Right, so that's a different kind of thing. When you have lights that need to be turned on, temperature control, snow plowing because it's dangerous, people are going to need to walk, you know, that kind of stuff. So because it's for a large group of people, so there is room, much more room for leniency. But it's for an individual in their own home, that's where you get into it's more difficult to permit. And 5-8. Okay, we're going to stop in just a moment. What about your animals? Uvehemtecha, your animals. Says you can't. Your animal can't do malachas. So what does that mean? I can't have my animal. I mean, what is that? I can't.
Donkey?
My animal can't turn on a light for me on Shabbat. Like, what does that mean? So here, you're not allowed to have your animal do malacha for you on Shabbos. How would that be? Let's say I am walking outside of an Eruv where I'm not allowed to carry, and my donkey is walking along with me, and I want to take back to my house this bundle that I found on the ground. I won't carry it. I'll just pick it up and put it on top of the donkey's back, and the donkey will carry it home for me. Can't do that. The donkey cannot do malacha for me on Shabbos. That is also prohibited.
There has to be an exemption, God forbid. You are blind, and if you have a dog in front of you, you can't prohibit this.
So a dog leading a human being is not a malacha. There's no Shabbos violation. A human being can lead a human being. An animal can also lead a human being. There's no prohibition being done over there. Here, the animal's carrying, which I can't do, so I can't have the animal do it for me. That's the difference. See, that we can't do. But let's say an animal chewing grass and pulling it out of the ground. Well, that's not for me. That's so the animal will be able to eat. That is acceptable on Shabbos. That is no problem. Even though I'm not allowed to pull grass out of the ground on Shabbos, my cow can, because that's for the cow to be able to eat. It's not for me, and that's acceptable on Shabbos. And the last category in this pasuk is the convert that is in your midst. The question was asked before. That why emphasize here about the convert? I mean, a convert is obligated in all mitzvos. Over here, one of the reasons, there are other reasons as well, but one of the reasons why it's emphasized is because the ger, the convert, Shabbos, we know, is a special gift that was given to the Jewish people. And unlike many other mitzvos, if a non-Jew keeps Shabbos, they are punished for it. They're not allowed to keep Shabbos. A non-Jew is not permitted to keep Shabbos. Shabbos is a Jewish gift from Hashem to the Jews. A non-Jew is not permitted to keep Shabbos. And so therefore the emphasis over here has to be, once a non-Jew converts, then they are obligated in Shabbos, just like any Jew is obligated in Shabbos. As opposed to, let's say, the mitzvah of kosher. If a non-Jew wants to keep kosher, they don't have to. If they want to, because they, I don't know why they would want to, but they're perfectly allowed to keep the laws of kosher if they want to. But Shabbos, a non-Jew is not allowed to do, not allowed to keep. So here, there has to be an emphasis that once a person converts, then they are in the mitzvah of Shabbos like everybody else. So we will continue Mitzvah Hashem not next week, in 2 weeks. 2 weeks we'll continue. We have a few, little bit more to go in Shabbos, plus the Gedal verse 11 in 2 weeks.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.